So if you have your Bibles, we're going to be in Acts chapter 13, verse 13. Marvin, if you could turn this down just a little bit, because when I yell at him in the middle, I want him, I'm teasing. Everybody's like, what? It's on page 944. 944. We'll be there in just a minute. I wanted to say thank you for the nice gift that you all gave us last week. I've always wanted to own a cornucopia, and now I have one, and I'm so excited. And so thank you for the gift cards that were attached as well. Sherry's already spent all of that. No, I'm kidding. Is she here? No, she went up with the kiddo. So anyway, but we really appreciate that and enjoy serving here. Wanted to just let you know as a way of announcement that, you know, we've talked about from the very beginning of Gateway before we even launched that we wanted to be a church planting church. And thankfully there is an organization here that we're partnered with in Cleveland that what they do is they train church planters. They assess them. It's a pretty rigorous assessment. You don't just get to become a church planter because you want to be one, and you have to go through all that, and then there's an interview portion that's 4 hours long. It's pretty intense, and then they go through 9 months of what they call launch, which is launch school, and that's where they learn how to plant a church. They have a coach assigned to them, someone who's hopefully planted or at least an encourager along the way, and they have a lot of homework and a lot of things that they have to do. And so just by way of announcement, we're going to be helping lead out in one of those. Some of you are going to know this person that I'm about to say is going to go out and plant a church, but it's being announced this morning, so I've been given permission to announce this. Some of you won't know this name, and that's okay, and we'll introduce you to this person sometime soon. One of the persons that I've always admired and respected and worked alongside of. I went to him about 4 months ago and said, where are you at in ministry? It was the same question that somebody asked me, and started my pilgrimage into church planting. And he said, well, I'm not sure. You know, we're trying to work through all of that. And I was like, well, what about church planting? Which was the statement that was made to me. And so I thought, you know, worked on me. We'll see if it works on somebody else. And so he said, well, I don't know. And so we began to pray through that, and he's already started the launch school and has told his pastor and elders this last week that he would be going to plant a church and is announcing that this morning. Pastor Dan Graham, who is at North Olmsted Friends Church, which is where I came from before coming to plant this church, is going to plant a church in Cam's Corner, if you know that area of Cleveland. And so we're working on how that will look and what that will be and that sort of stuff. And so Gateway is going to be have a primary role in that church plant. And I'm excited about it. Dan's excited about it. He called me yesterday, though, and he said, you know, I'm excited about this, but why am I so anxious? And I was like, welcome to church planting, you know? And I said, man, I was there. And he goes, I wake up some mornings, I'm so excited, and then I go, what am I doing? I'm leaving a known for an unknown. And I said, yeah, I didn't tell you about that part. See, what happens now is you get scared to death. And but we had already kind of talked through some of those things. So that's going to be happening. September of next year is what they're looking to do a launch. Pastor Dan already lives in that area. So this is right up his alley. This is where he has a heart and a passion. So leadership team, we're going to need to get together soon to start working on how all of this stuff is going to flesh out. Shouldn't come as too much a surprise to all of us who've been around for a while. We've talked about doing this. I've already started talking to our network and our churches that we know of to see if they would sponsor and support. So that's kind of where we are in the process. Kind of exciting to be a part of that. There's several other church plants that are going to happen in the next year or two. Jeff Algram, that's right back here in the back. So everybody kind of turn that way. I know it's kind of rude to always look, but there he is. Jeff's going to be out in the Lorraine area, and they're starting to put together their core group and launch and all that other stuff. And so we're going to need to help them get going. And so if you know people over that way, okay, in the Lorraine area, talk with Jeff, okay? He wants to talk to them. They don't all have to be believers. I will tell you, there are some people that weren't quite sure about what this church was about and everything else, but they wanted to help Gateway because they could see what it was going to do for the community. All right. So don't always just think, oh, it's got to be people who know and understand church. It doesn't. We had some people go to bat for us and still do to this day that are not followers of Christ. They would tell you that, but they're a huge believer in what Gateway is trying to do. So if you know people in the Rain area, business people, you know, workers, people who live there, make sure that you touch base with Jeff, okay, because he needs those contacts and needs those names. All right, all that being said, let me give you a list of bands here, okay, artists, and I want you to tell me what they have in common, okay? I'm going to list these out for you here. You ready? Soundgarden, Creed. Are you a Creed hater? Or you're just thinking this is random? Okay. Creed's awesome. Rage Against the Machine. Do you like them? Oh, they're good. Okay, well, I'm glad they have your seal of approval. The Beatles. Blink 182. What's the common denominator of all of those bands? Huh? They use guitars. Very good, but that's not what we're looking for. They're loud. Anybody know? There, who said that? That was perfect. Was that Katie back there? Yes. They're broken up, you know? And when you look at all of those groups and you think about, you know, man, you know, some of these people, we really miss, you know? Some people really miss the Beatles. Some people really miss Soundgarden. Some people really miss Creed. Some people really miss some of these other bands, Blink 182, you know? But they're no longer around. And it's not because somebody said, you know, we're just kind of tired of their music. That really wasn't the issue, was it? And if you ever watch, like, the VH1, especially those documentaries, I usually like to watch those bands that I used to follow, and you realize just how much they fought, you know? You realize just how much, wow, it looked like everything was going well, right? At the concert and all the CD sales, or back in my day, cassette. All right, I was an 8-track, so don't go there. You know, and all of those things like that, and you go, man, what happened? And it was always the drummer's fault. Have you ever noticed that? No, I'm kidding. It always seems like it was, but it wasn't. It was all of them. But it is always amazing to me as you go back and listen to their stories, and maybe you know of someone like this, and I've just missed it. No one ever takes ownership. Have you ever noticed that with all the conflicts? They never take on it. No one ever says, you know, I was the jerk, okay? Now, I say nobody. I'll leave room for maybe there was somebody that you heard one time say it. But it's usually someone saying, I'm just happy to be where I am now. You know, I love the music that I'm making now. And, you know, I've just let bygones be bygones, like they were the noble one, right? They didn't cause any conflict. It was somebody else. And then we look at that and we go, you know, why can't someone just own up and say it's Yoko Ono's fault with every band that's ever broken up, right? I mean, that's what we know. You know, if that wasn't for that Yoko Ono, you know, Beatles would still be performing, you know. Probably not. Probably not. Because there was just some conflicts that they couldn't work through. But I want you to know that a lot of times within a church, there's conflicts. And where there's humanity, there's conflicts. And it's amazing, but churches are made of humans, which means there's conflicts. Now, thankfully, I'm talking about it this morning from a perspective of conflicts in the church where we don't really have some of the conflicts that I've had to endure in the past. Our conflicts here are more along the lines of what someone would maybe like to see happen. It's not a missional problem as much as it is, you know, a choice, you know. Well, I wish we would have done this over this. Yeah, not a big deal. But I've been in some churches before that it was just outlandish. And maybe you've seen that before. And some of you may be attending Gateway for the first time this morning going, man, I've been there, and that's the reason why I wasn't really interested in church. And it burnt me out. Or I saw it happen with my mom or dad. I will tell you that this is the reason why a lot of pastors' kids have trouble. Now, some of it is the pastor's responsibility to make sure that his kids aren't bitter, okay? That's my responsibility as a parent, that if one of you does something stupid, that I don't go back and demonize you in front of my kid, because what does that tell my kid? This is how you do this. And then one of these days, somebody else does something crazy, and I do it again in front of my child, and pretty much, what does the child learn? I am to be bitter towards the church. I've seen pastors who work 100 hours a week, 80 to 100 hours a week through their church, and man, that's all they do nonstop. And I don't know if it's the expectation of the church or the expectation of their mind or both, and it's probably a mixture of both. But their kids just absolutely hate the church, because what they see is this: that church took my daddy away from me, and I don't like them. But you know, it's my responsibility as pastor to draw the line, isn't it? You know? Because I can tell you that while I love Gateway and I want to do everything I can for Gateway, ultimately, the failure in my life would be to embitter Josiah. I mean, thousands of people could come to Christ at Gateway, and that would be absolutely wonderful. You couldn't take anything away from that. But the blemish on me as a father would be if I embittered my child. Now then, here's what Josiah will learn. People are going to disappoint. People are going to go out there and say bad things about me. That doesn't mean that we have to turn the bitterness back. Okay, that's just reality. We all say things that we regret, don't we? We all hit the send button on email that we go, I wish I wouldn't have done that. You know, I wish that that wouldn't have happened. I wish that I would have said that better. Okay, that's not really what I'm talking about. I'm talking about those things that it's just a constant character deficiency. And I want us to look at Acts chapter 13, verse 13 this morning. And then we'll flip over just a couple pages, so keep your Bibles open. Acts chapter 13, verse 13. This is the Apostle Paul here, and John Mark, who is one of Jesus' disciples, is here. Listen to what happens. This is when Paul was on one of his missionary journeys. Paul and his companions had left Paphos by ship for Pamphylia, landing at the port town of Perga. There John Mark left them and returned to Jerusalem. But Paul and Barnabas traveled inland to Antioch of Pisidia. Now, to turn over just a couple pages to chapter 15, verse 39. Because we don't know exactly what happened there, it almost just kind of sounds like John Mark needed to go home, right? But listen to what happened here. Let's go back to verse 36 so you can kind of get some background. After some time, Paul said to Barnabas, "Let's go back and visit each city where we previously preached the word of the Lord to see how the new believers are doing." Barnabas agreed and wanted to take along John Mark, but Paul disagreed strongly since John Mark had deserted them in Pamphylia and had not continued with them in their work. Their disagreement was so sharp that they separated. Barnabas took John Mark with him and sailed for Cyprus. Paul chose Silas, and as he left, the believers entrusted him to the Lord's gracious care. What's going on here? We've got a sharp division in the church, and a sharp division with the two first missionaries of the church to the Gentile world, to the non-Jewish world. Now, this is big-time stuff. These are two leaders, two Christian leaders. I mean, it would be like you and I sitting down and taking a survey and saying, who are the top two famous Christian leaders in America? And those two having a sharp disagreement. And you notice what happens. Barnabas wants to take John Mark. And you say, well, why is Barnabas so, you know, close to John Mark? Well, for one, it's his cousin. So now we got a whole family thing. All right, now, man, it's getting good now. Because Barnabas realizes, hey, you know, you can, and you all know this, you can kind of let me talk bad about my family, but don't you talk bad about my family, right? When you get married one day, and one of the first things that you need to learn is, be very, very careful how you talk about the in-laws. Because while your spouse may say, I can't believe why my mother does blah, 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 you'll learn very, very quickly that you don't chime in and go, yeah, and when she said, because now then you've got a fight, and you're going, I was just agreeing. they can say it. And those of you who are married and newly married, you're going, man, yeah, I shouldn't have said that. Okay, I went there. Won't go there again. I'll just go, yep. And that's the end of that sentence. Yep, with a period. That's it, okay? You just agree, you move on, all right? And later on when they say, and I can't believe it when he did that, you go, yep, and you end it there, okay? But don't add, because when you add, you're in big trouble. You're in big trouble. So here's Barnabas. He sees the value of reinstating John Mark. Now, there's lots of scholars that, you know, have given out about three different things that, you know, is kind of the top of the list as to why John Mark left. One of them, you know, the biggest one that I've heard out there is kind of he was homesick and wanted to go home. We don't really know. No one tells us throughout Scripture whatever happened. It's just kind of left for us to conjecture. And when I look at it, I just kind of go, maybe John Mark just got tired of Paul. Maybe he didn't like the way Paul said some things. Maybe Paul was now the leader and John Mark really wasn't seen as a leader. Maybe he got a little bit jealous. That's where I kind of landed with it. But it's for us to conjecture. The bottom line is there was major conflict in the church, not just between Paul and John Mark, because Barnabas continued with him on the travels. But then when they were going to go out again, Barnabas says, let's take John Mark. I got a great idea. And Paul says, he's not coming with me. Ever. Do I need to define that for you, Barnabas? Ever. Never, ever. And Scripture records there became such a sharp disagreement that they went separate ways. You know, a lot of times that's kind of the elephant in the church. There's conflict. We don't really talk about it. Now, again, one of the things I'm thankful for with Gateway is, you know, we're not really in conflict missionally. We may say, like, for instance, you know, I'd like to see this happen or I'd like to see that happen, but it's not a missional thing. It's a preferential thing, which is totally different. And you have to learn within conflict the difference between arguing over something that is missional, okay, missional versus preferential. Radical difference. Radical difference. And a lot of times what I think we elevate the arguments to, it's usually found within the preferential, not within the missional. For instance, we're looking at, you know, launching our cafe and coffee house with Nexus. And if the if the general design aesthetics team comes back, says, you know, we found this great color scheme and it's polka dot, pink and maroon, okay? Now, I'm going to have an issue with that, all right? And I think a lot of people are going to have an issue with that. And I picked those colors because I think that is so random. There's no way that that's what they're thinking about right now. And if you are, please go a different direction. That becomes more preferential than it is missional. But I also know that there's no reason to go back to them and say, you guys are just stupid. Because now then what's happened? We've turned preferential into a big fight. Instead of what I probably know would work, is just breaking out those colors on a Sunday morning and saying, hey, church, what do you think? And everyone in absolute horror going, no, right? There's just a way to kind of deal with that. But that's more preferential. Now, I know them well enough to know they've got some good people on there. But here's what I have for you as far as good news. If you want to help us with selecting some of those things and working on some of those things, that team needs some people. We've had some people that's had to move and that sort of thing, and other people that have said, you know, I feel God calling me to another team where I really feel like my talents are exercised best, and I've got a real passion for that, and we've given them the blessing to go do that. We need some people who kind of have that artist mindset, okay? So if you are interested in serving in that area, you can either fill out your little connection card and put aesthetics or design on there and we'll get with you, or you can see Carrie, who's sitting right back here at the back, all right? But we do need some help in that area. And so if you could help us out with that, that would be terrific. But you know what I look at is a lot of times is where we lose out on establishing conflict and working through it is when we lose the argument, we demonize the person, don't we? Have you ever noticed that when someone knows they've lost the argument, suddenly it turns to demonizing the person? You know, instead of dealing with the idea, you attack the person. If you can degrade the person enough, you know, you've done what you wanted to do. And so I wanted us to turn to the great theologian who is found in the movie Dumb and Dumber. otherwise known as Harry to Lloyd, when he said, "Just when I thought you couldn't get any dumber, you go and do something like this." And what's the rest of it? "And totally redeem yourself." You remember when he sold the van for the moped, you know? And we're all watching the movie going, "Oh my gosh, he's just going to so trash him." And he goes, "And you totally redeem yourself." I want to introduce you to someone this morning that totally redeems us a lot of times as a fundraising group. And I'm sure Beth was like, "I cannot believe that he used Dumb and Dumber to elevate me to a status that is just amazing." But I've been waiting on this all weekend, Beth, because you totally redeem us. Beth, come on up here. I wanted Beth to just kind of share for a few moments about what we're doing with our fundraising team, where we need your help, and that sort of thing. So I knew that you would be going, "I cannot believe that he used that line." But she really does, and those on that team know this to be a fact. So I wanted Beth to just kind of share with you all where we were as a fundraising team, kind of what we're working to do, and really where we need your help in the process, okay?
Excellent. Yeah, that was exactly how I thought I was going to be introduced, so that's perfect.
I wanted to pump you up there, right?
Uh-huh, okay. I appreciate it. All right, awesome. Well, it's perfect, because before, when Alex started to talk about Nexus, I was like, "Oh, it's great that he's mentioning it," but then I thought we were going to have to wait a little while to talk about it, so it's perfect. So a lot's been going on over the last couple of months. I did speak to a lot of you back in September about what we were doing from the fundraising committee and the way that we were approaching raising funds and reaching out to you and asking you to be part of that. And so if I spoke to you then, it's nice to talk to you again. And if I haven't, we have some materials in the back that then I can pass out to you afterwards to bring you up to speed. But essentially, just wanted to reach out back to you and talk a little bit about the ways that we really would love to have your help as we continue to move kind of fast and furiously towards bringing the vision of Nexus to life, and definitely would love to have your help in getting them the funds raised. So primarily, and you see kind of a notice in the bulletin that there's the hand raiser cards that you would be able to pick up in the back, and that's at our booth. And we have a booth there that is just so fabulous. I don't know if any of you have stopped by to see it, but you really should, because it's just great. And also has the business plan. It has a binder from the aesthetics committee, which, as soon as we get those additional volunteers to work with Carrie, I'm sure we'll get even more filled with fabulous things. But it shows kind of the vision of what the Nexus will be, and it will continue to evolve as Nexus kind of continues to evolve. And we also have nexuscleveland.com that then posts that vision and that you'll be able to share with your family and friends. So obviously it's November, we're rolling into the holiday season, and you'll have a lot of opportunities over these next couple of months then to see people that you know and to reconnect with them. And as you do that, I think it's a great opportunity to share with them a little bit about what we're doing with Nexus, because I think right now, and I would guess a lot of us have been feeling kind of a lot of the kind of pain in the community over the last couple of months as the economy is kind of a struggling place to be right now. And I think that, you know, as we're looking at what we're trying to do with Nexus and serving the city and really creating this great connection point to bring Christ into the marketplace, it's just a really hopeful message to share with your family and friends. And so as you're doing that, please reference them to the site, ask them for their donations, ask them to support. This past Friday, and I'm sorry I wasn't able to attend, I take a painting class on Friday nights, and I don't know why I signed up for an oil painting class on Friday nights, but I did. But but it's fine. It's been great. Once I get there, it's fabulous. But Ambrose and Jill and a bunch of people had kind of organized this community event where then they did bowling, and with the ideas then the proceeds from that would be donated to Nexus. And so I think as we think about all of the upcoming exciting things that we have over these next weeks, you know, if you're having a Christmas party and, you know, you have a bunch of people over and you want to put a little gift out there and do a raffle, and that those proceeds could be donated to Nexus, you know, we really just encourage you to keep it top of mind and to think about what we're doing. So one, reach out to your family and friends, and then two, if there's people that you can think of who, as we get to the end of the year now and are looking to give more charitable contributions as they plan for their taxes for next year and want that tax-deductible donation to be there, definitely there's the hand-raiser cards that you can fill out and you can drop into a fabulous box back there, and one of us from the fundraising committee will reach out to them and connect with them and have the conversations about the business plan and the donations and all of that. So if there's somebody that you can think of that might be looking to give that tax-deductible donation of a larger amount, we're happy to have those conversations. So please fill out their information and we'll get in touch with them.
Awesome. You see why we have her around? Isn't she good? Thank you, Beth, so much. The hand raiser cards that she was talking about that are back there at the back, there's a box that says contacts in your network, giving type, and then the reason is just basically like, you know, is this person a community-oriented person? Are they a Christian? And in that way, it takes off the pressure off of you to have to go to somebody and say, I would like for you to give to this, but I still don't understand all about it. That's what our fundraising team is there to help you do. Okay, so if you know somebody that you're like, hey, you know, they like to give to Cleveland Things, they may really be interested in this, but I'm really hesitant about talking to them because I'm not quite sure I could encapsulate it the way it needs to be, that's what the fundraising team is there to do. And someone from that team or myself will go to them and say, here it is. Here's what we're trying to do. It's not going to be a high-pressure deal. We're just going to lay out the vision, and if they get a vision for it, then great, okay? So that's what we're trying to do there. So she totally redeemed us, all right? Thank you, Beth, once again. You know, a lot of times when we approach the Bible and we talk about conflict, I don't know about you, but I always read myself as the good guy. Is that where you kind of land? Like when you read Daniel in the lion's den, you're not the bad people that threw Daniel in. Right? You're Daniel. You're the good person. You're the praying person. Maybe you see yourself in the stories as David, you know? And you're like, yeah, I'm the good David. A couple times with David, not so good, you know? But I'm the good David. You're never Goliath, right? I mean, have you ever envisioned yourself, oh, that's me, I'm Goliath, you know? You know, the one that lost his head, you know? That's an intellectual joke. You got to really think through that one, okay? I got to write that down. These are not the intellectual crown. You know, sometimes you lose your head, don't you? You know, but we're always David. You know, I'm the good guy. I'll tell you a true story. Church there in Arkansas, where I'm originally from, that was given multi-millions of dollars. One of their church members had passed away, and they left in their will several million dollars. It was huge. This is a pretty decent-sized church, you know, 500 people that went there, okay? So this isn't like, you know, several million dollars to a group of 40, all right? It's $7 million to, you know, a group of 500. And they were all excited about it, and they were celebrating the gift. And, I mean, people all over Arkansas heard about it. You know, I mean, that's a big deal. So what are they going to do with the money? Well, one idea was to hold on to, you know, let's figure some things out. One idea was let's, you know, build this building that we've always wanted to build. Another one was, you know, let's start a school. I mean, there was about 3,000 ideas out of 500 people. You know how it gets, all right? You know what ultimately happened with that church? They split. They split over the usage of the money. What was supposed to be a blessing turned into a curse. And you know why I think that happened? Because the church didn't understand its mission from the very beginning. Because if you understood your mission, you would know where that money was going, right? Now, maybe you got to figure out how much of the dollars. But if you're a missional church, you get $2 million. What do you infuse it into? Whatever you're already doing or whatever you've already got on the map. But if you're not a missional church, you've got problems. And I will tell you, the biggest conflicts I've seen in church are when churches lose their missional mindset. And if we lose our missional mindset, we've got problems. But if you keep your missional mindset, it's not a surprise to folks. You know, you just keep going. You just keep moving. It's who you are. I'll tell you another story within a church. And I debated on whether even sharing this one because this one still brings back intense pain to me. So I went back and forth last night whether to even share it because I really don't enjoy this one at all. One of the things that that I've tried to do, and I don't always do a good job of, but I've tried to kind of remind myself to do when conflicts come up is to try to get to the point where I can state someone else's concern or argument or whatever else in a way that honors them. And I hope that maybe this morning this is kind of your takeaway. And that is when the conflicts come up, because they will, all right, Churches are perfect incubators for conflict because everybody's got a stake. Nobody can say, hey, you just fall in line, we pay you, and therefore you do, you know, what we say to do. This isn't like work, okay? This is a church, so everybody's got a stake in it. But I hope that you'll kind of take that away from this time is, you know, try to state the other person's position in a way that honors them when you're in that conflict. And it's hard. I'll just tell you, I don't do that well at it, but I'm trying to get to it. And I was at a church previously. It wasn't here in Ohio, okay? I was at a church previously, and I knew of a potential situation where one of our committees was not really doing the right thing in the way that they were going to approach the budget for the following year for our custodian. And that custodian and I had become friends, and I knew of what was going on. I knew it wasn't the right thing. And there was another person in the church that had found out about it, and they decided the volcano treatment was in order. Do you all know that one? You know, look out, and everybody is in big trouble. And so, you know, a lot of people talk outside of church and talk about, you know, when we come to business meeting, I'm going to tell them. And then a lot of times they don't really do that. But this person was that type of person who would say those things. And so she stood up in the middle of business meeting right as they got to the point about talking about this issue with the custodian and trying to rectify the situation. Well, what she didn't know was I'd gone behind the scenes to our committees because I don't embarrass committees in public to say they're doing the wrong thing. I don't think that's the right thing to do as a pastor. And so I'd gone to them. I said, hey, guys, you're not doing this thing right because look here and here and here. And so over the weekend, right before we were about to have the business meeting, they fixed it. But the problem was is this. That person who was upset came looking for a fight. When someone comes looking for a fight, throw logic out the window. Throw listening out the window. And so the committee then explained, you know, hey, we were going to do this in this budget, but we need to fix this, blah, blah, blah. And so they explained why they were fixing it. They didn't say anything that I had a conversation with them, which was good. I didn't want that, okay? I just want to be able to go behind the scenes and say, hey, we need to correct this. This isn't the right thing to do. They corrected it, did the right thing, but the problem was the person that came looking for a fight wasn't listening. Stood up in the business meeting and started just ranting about, you know, all the bad things, you know, that this church was doing and this, you know, blah, blah, blah. Went through the whole thing about what this custodian ought to be paid. Well, if she would have listened, it had just been fixed. So the moderator, who is a lawyer, okay, who does criminal cases, goes, we fixed it. And in my mind, I can hear him saying that 21, 22 times. We fixed it. We got it. We fixed it. You're right. We fixed it. And if you had a recording of that night, I'm giving it to you almost verbatim. We fixed it. You're right. You're right in what you're saying. It wasn't the right thing. We got it. We fixed it. We got it. And she just kept going on and on and on. About three quarters of the way into her speech about how everything was bad and they ought to fix it, and she's yelling, okay? I mean, she's yelling. I'm sitting at the back because I don't really like church business meetings, okay? And as a pastor, I want as far to the back as what I can get. And we don't have business meetings here, by the way, okay? So you don't have to worry about that. And sitting as far to the back, she turns around in front of everybody and goes, Alex, you're a friend of his. You stand up and defend him. And I'm sitting there going, uh-oh. What do I say here? So I'm going to stand up and say good things about him because there's lots of good things I like about him. But I'm not going to touch the subject, right? Because I already know the subject's already taken care of. So I go to stand up. Well, she starts into a rant again about something else with the church, you know, and so I go to sit back down, and then she yells at me to stand up again. And I'm like, okay, well, you know, I'll stand up and say something nice about him because I like him. And she starts into another rant. So I'm like, okay, well, I'm, you know. And so then I go, and then finally the moderator just goes, look, it's over. We've already dealt with it. We're moving on. And he called for prayer, and we ended the session. And everybody's just like, what is going on? So I decided I'm going to go over there and walk over to her and explain to her, look, I'd already gone behind the scenes. I was totally on board, but, you know, you wouldn't stop talking, and therefore it was kind of hard for me to start because you're yelling louder than what I would have talked. So I go over there to explain to her what's going on, And she takes me by the throat, and she starts yelling obscenities and saying, I'm going to get you, and I'm going to take you out. Your days are over. About that time, five men converged on the scene trying to get her away. I just stood there and stared her down. And thankfully, I didn't push back to get away, because we all know what would have happened, right? Pastor Alex pushed a woman away. I'm sure she would have flailed and acted like it was the worst thing that's ever happened. So I thought, whoa, what has just happened here? And the lawyer who's at the front of the room realizes, we have a criminal case right here in the church. And he says, I'm out of here, man. I'm getting out. He said, I'm going home. So then we had a meeting with all of our leadership. And the problem was, is this. Most of them did not want to deal with it. Because when you have an irate person like that, who wants them after you? Right? Let's just kind of brush it, you know. And I will tell you that that was the worst day and weeks of my life, but it was my best moment. Because I didn't strike back, I didn't, you know, pray down hellfire upon that person or, you know, any of those things. I knew that there were some deep issues within her that God needed to deliver her from. I remember sitting in that leadership meeting, and you tell me how you would have responded in your own mind. One of the leaders looked over at me, and as we were trying to deal with the situation of what to do, you know, they were like, we don't really want to kick her out of the church, but at the same time, what do we do? And, you know, a lot of them were going, I say, you know, let's just not do anything. And I'm sitting there going, you can't allow this kind of behavior to continue. I'm not saying kick her out of the church, but maybe somebody calls her up and says, please don't do that again. Okay, maybe, you know, is that pushing the envelope too much? And one of the gentlemen looked over at me, and he goes, well, Alex, I just want to know what you did to her. I said, what? He goes, well, you must have done something. I was just in shock. Suddenly, it became my fault. I'm going, you've got to be kidding me. And I said, well, you know, no, we've not had a history and everything else. And I want you to know that person would come over to the church offices where I was, purposely park behind me and come inside to try to pick a fight. When I was moving, my mom and dad knew everything that had been going on. Thankfully, my dad had been a part of churches all of his life, and my grandfather was a pastor, so I knew that people get a little goofy, right? So I knew about all those things. But my mom and my dad were there as we were moving. That was when I was about to move to Ohio. And she came to the door and demanded that I go around town, because now that it was out, that I go around town saying it was my fault. And she got so irate that we finally had to call the police. And so there I was, trying to figure out Christianity, church. Do I even want to be a part of churches? Maybe you've been there before. Trying to figure out really what I wanted to do with the rest of my life when I had some options now, because I was leaving. And I look in front of me, and there's my dad who's saying, call the police. And that's exactly what we did, because she wouldn't leave. And my mom behind me crying. And it was at that moment that I had to make some decisions. Is this the church? Is this really what I want to deal with? Is this really what I'm called to? Or what do I do? Those were hard, hard days. Difficult days. A lot of the people knew that I didn't do anything. But reality was hurt. Because there were some people that wanted to somehow pin it on me because they didn't want to deal with it. Would you want to deal with that? Knowing that once she was done with me, you were next? It was weird, man. I still to this day go back to that moment and go, what happened? What went wrong? And you know, sometimes with conflicts in the church, it doesn't necessarily get to that level, but we just get turned off, don't we? We see some conflicts or some issues, and we just go, man, I don't think that's about me. And I understand. When people say to me, oh, you know, I saw fighting in the church, I'm like, whew. Was yours verbal or physical? Verbal. Physical. What? I never did press charges. I didn't do any of that stuff. I just wanted to be done with it. You know what I'm saying? You just want to be done with something. I wanted to give you a few things because it was at that moment when I wasn't necessarily being strangled, but just being told somebody was going to take me out, which is a little disconcerting, that I thought, you know, I don't feel like that, that you're really speaking to me in a way that is validating me as a person. You know, I mean, that's kind of, I was like, you know, we've gone to the extreme here. And I want to give you a few takeaways this morning. We talked about when you demonize the person, you've lost the argument. Articulate their position in a way that they feel honored. But sometimes, and this is where I got to there, at that place, we keep giving of ourselves and there is no reciprocal response. You ever been there? Just like, man, you do everything. There's no reciprocal response. I mean, you've forgiven, you've tried to work through, you've tried to do everything within the conflict, and then you're just finally like, whew, I'm just done with it. It's just no reciprocal response. Over in 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 11, I want you to hear how this conflict finally resolves itself. And I want you to also keep in mind when you sometimes go, you know, I do a lot of things for people and it just never seems to kind of come back. And listen to this, 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 11. This is when Paul knows he's about to die. He's getting very close. He says, only Luke is with me. Bring Mark with you when you come, for he will be helpful to me in my ministry. It was about 12 years later after the split. You know, we don't always get it right in conflict, do we? Paul realized as he was getting near death, you know, I probably shouldn't have done that. We need to reconcile this. And you know something, not only bring Mark with you, but what did you notice what he said? He will be helpful. He's no longer a drag in my mind. He's going to be helpful. And you know, when you think about conflict resolution and working through conflicts, Jesus was the ultimate one for conflict resolution. Because God had a conflict. God's conflict was as this. Man has separated himself from me. Humanity has so driven themselves away from me. Now they're blaming me for all the problems. God, it's your fault. How come you don't intervene? How come you don't do this? God's like, were you there when the original mess occurred? It was you guys. I'm the one trying to reconcile here. And Jesus was the ultimate one to come and resolve the conflict of sin, the sin that separates us from God. And what Jesus wants us to know is this. The conflict that we have with each other and the conflict that we have with God can be resolved by coming to Jesus. And through Jesus. And so when God looks at us and says, I sent my one and only son, there's a reason why, because there's this massive conflict and it's called sin. And what Jesus does for us is to resolve that, to redeem that, to buy it back again. So yeah, there's going to be conflict within the church. Now I pray it's over preferences, not over mission, because we can handle that. We need to be big boys and big girls and work through those things. We don't need to embitter our children. We don't need to demonize one another, but we need to work through those things. Because for those of you in this room, and sometimes myself included, when we feel like, man, I just gave and gave and gave and gave to that relationship and never saw anything back, you ever think Jesus kind of feels a little bit that way? He's given everything. And a lot of times we go back to him and blame him for the problems in our life. How come you're not intervening? How come you're not doing this? How come you're not doing that? He feels it all the time. My prayer is for those of you who've never trusted in Christ as your Savior, that you would do that this morning. And in that conflict with God, that you would use the Redeemer that he sent in Jesus Christ. For those of us who are believers, that we would understand conflict will happen. It happened to two spiritual giants, Paul, Barnabas, and you can even include John Mark if you want to in that category. But in the end, what did Paul learn? Look, John Mark's useful for ministry. Let's redeem this relationship. Send him back. He's helpful. And I think that's where all of us need to get to, because as we work as a church towards the cafe and coffee house and launching other churches and all those other things, we're going to have some preferentials. We just will. It's the way that it is. But let's keep that in perspective. Let's keep it in perspective. Let's keep it where God would be honored, that we would get to the point a little bit quicker than what Paul did. We would get there a little bit faster. I want everyone just to bow their heads and close their eyes. This was certainly a difficult thing for me to talk about, because I certainly don't want to talk down that person that I had the conflict in, and so it's hard to tell the story with not painting the picture, but reality sometimes is just the bottom line. And so, Lord, I say this here this morning not because I haven't already dealt with this, but at the same time just for the church to hear that, Lord, I just have given forgiveness there. And Lord, if there are any issues that I created in that situation, which certainly there was nothing found to be there, but at the same time, sometimes even little things and perception get magnified. Lord, that you would forgive me in that situation. And Father, I just pray for that person this day. Lord, I don't believe that worst moment should define their life. Just like my best moment can't define mine, and that my worst moment shouldn't define my life, and that everyone sitting here this morning, that their worst moment should never define their life. But Father, that we would leave plenty of grace, as we sang about earlier in the service, leave plenty of room for grace, plenty of room for forgiveness, that as we deal with conflict, Lord, that you would be honored. Father, that as we have conflicts with each other, that we would be able to state their position in a way that would honor them. And Father, that the conflicts that we may have through Gateway, Lord, I just pray that they will be preferentials and not missional. And so, God, we just give you our hearts, our lives. And so, Father, if there's anybody in this room this morning who, not so much having a conflict within the church, but conflict even with family as it approaches the holidays here, Lord, I just pray that there will be redemption there. That there'd be redemption within the home, within the family, as well as the church. And so, Father, we just give you our lives. We just pray all this in Jesus' name. Amen.